From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Václav Havel was an artist, playwright first, then a dissident, a prisoner, a velvet revolutionary, a president, a freedom fighter who was always a free spirit, who spoke of love and truth and the power of the powerless, but also said only those who laugh at themselves can laugh authentically. He stood heroically against tyranny, became president of Czechoslovakia. Now you might find his spirit from the Arab Spring to Occupy Wall Street. He died Sunday at 75. This hour On Point, we look at the politics, life, and vision of the great Václav Havel. You can join the conversation. Do you remember him at his best? Václav Havel, the artist, freedom fighter, hero to the world. Do you see his legacy at work today? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It was at the end of the Soviet domination, communist rule in Czechoslovakia, that he famously stood after over 40 years in the square in Prague, and eventually was elected president in 1989 after years as the dissident, playwright, artist, political figure right in the middle of the Velvet Revolution. Here he is, greeted with cheers in Prague's Venceslaus Square, 1989.
I promise I won't betray your confidence, the president told the crowd. I will bring this country in a decent and peaceful way to free elections. It is a task for us all.
Task for us all, Václav Havel always said. February 1990, just after that election, he spoke with PBS's Jim Lehrer on the McNeil Lehrer News Hour about freedom and what he saw as the nature of mankind.
I think this is a part of the nature of man, the desire for freedom, for dignified life. Of course, man is also a weak creature with many bad qualities, and it depends on which of his qualities will, in a certain social situation and in a certain climate, prevail.
There were no easy answers with Václav Havel, but in the end, he always leaned toward liberty. He said, a realist. He was a realist who carries hope, and hope is the belief that freedom and justice have meaning, that liberty is always worth the trouble. That communism was ultimately defeated, he said, by the resistance of being and man to manipulation. In this hour, we will go to Prague and speak to an intimate ally and friend of Václav Havel. But first, his politics, his art, his vision. We're joined from New York by Michael Meyer. He's former European editor and correspondent for Newsweek International, covered Václav Havel and Prague's Velvet Revolution through the end of the Cold War and into the 1990s. His big book on Havel and the Revolution is The Year That Changed the World, The Untold Story of the Fall of the Berlin Wall. He's now communications director, chief speechwriter for the Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon. Michael Meyer, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you with us. And with us from Philadelphia is Carol Rocamora, professor of theater at New York University's Tisch School of the Arts. She writes about theater for The Guardian and American Theater. Her biography on the former Czech president is Acts of Courage, Václav Havel's Life in the Theater. Carol Rocamora, thank you so much for being here.
Hello. It's an honor and pleasure to be here. And hello, Michael.
It's great to have you.
Hello there.
Michael Meyer, remind us of the stature and significance of this man when history was really turning right there at the end, the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe and ultimately the Soviet Union. His significance there.
Well, Tom, it's Václav Havel was one of the most interesting men I've ever met. You read all the comments and the glowing encomiums to him in his obituaries and the reminiscences. He's often called the defining figure of the 20th century, certainly the moral voice of his country and even his era, a hero. All of that is absolutely true. And yet, as I sit here in this radio booth looking back at Havel, I see a tousle-haired figure in a moth-eaten scarf and an old stained green army jacket and battered shoes. And I remember this man that spent so many years in jail, who wanted to be, above all, just live an ordinary life, be a human being, be a writer, a man of letters. And yet he was sucked into this world of politics. And it was as almost as you say, Tom, a matter of indignity. He hated the indignity of having to ask permission to exercise his basic right as a human being. And that was the essence of his courage. He believed in the power of the powerless. He counted himself among the powerless. But his power, as he recognized it, was to be able to speak out. And so he lived as if, and all those around him lived as if they did not live under communism, as if they did not live under tyranny, as if they lived in freedom and had the right to act freely.
Lived as if, paid for that during those many years of communist domination in Czechoslovakia. He was the son of wealthy Czech family, prominent, both for its sort of industrial background, its intellectual and diplomatic background. That put him in a bad spot when communists came to power. He was prominent early on with his plays. We'll talk with Carol about those. But he came into politics when politics came unavoidably into everyone's life. Here's a little bit all the way back in 1968. And this is a BBC interview with Joan Bakewell. Václav Havel said, talking here about how influential Czech artists and writers like himself, then as a playwright, were involved in their country's politics.
Czechoslovak writers in last months and in last years really played a very important political role, but not only with their art, but also in their activity as citizens.
So in this respect, you are now engaged in political activity, are you?
I also try to be engaged a little. I don't know if I can do it or not, but I try it.
The ambivalence right there in the voice of Václav Havel drifting in inexorably in politics in a land where that was unavoidable. And then in 1989, 68 didn't work out. 89 did. Reporters looked on as public dissent began to rise, protesters gathering in mass in Venceslas Square during what would eventually be called the Velvet Revolution, with Václav Havel right in its center.
Elsewhere in the old Eastern Bloc, there had been scenes of violence. But here on the streets of Prague, what turned out to be Europe's, if not the world's, most gentle revolution was building to a climax.
Gentle, but quite definitive, and Havel ending up named president of the country, elected president of the country. He had triumphs and disappointments in that presidency, but always, always a voice for that as-if life. Live as if you were free. Carol Rockamore, take us back into this man's art. He began there, and his thinking about the human spirit. I mean, this was a president who quoted Samuel Beckett and Ionesco and Franz Kafka, his countrymen. It really was grounded in his art.
Absolutely, Tom. You know, Havel would sit in the Café Slavia at age 16 with his other friends who were not allowed to go to school for higher education because their parents were not members of the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
And he would read Beckett and Ionesco from translations smuggled under the table at the coffee at the Café Slavia from older poets who got these manuscripts illegally and gave them to the younger generation.
Wow.
Havel couldn't go to college. He got a job as a stagehand at a little tiny, what they called pocket theater, called the Balustrade, blocks away from the Charles Bridge. And he was a stagehand there. But of course, since Havel is essentially and always has been a writer, his talents were soon recognized. He began to write cabaret acts. And pretty soon in the year 1963, he wrote his first full-length play called The Garden Party, about a man in a nameless, faceless bureaucracy, the theme of the dehumanization of man under communism, an absurdist play in the spirit of Beckett and Ionesco. And sure enough, that was followed by another full-length play called The Memorandum in 1965. and a third full-length play. And by the way, he ended up writing 11 full-length plays and 7 one-acts before he became president 2 or 3 decades later.
All the way back and in the memorandum, 1965, he's quoting Communist Party bosses then, but I mean, this is a quote in that play or a reference in that play that's certainly relevant now. Václav Havel in the memorandum quoting the, notorious instruction of Communist Party boss Antonin Novotny about, quote, not falling on our knees before facts. He resisted that always, Carol Rockamore. Talked about it as kind of the scientific view. It's interesting, an artist, but don't let go of facts. Don't let go of the scientific view, he said, Carol.
Yes, absolutely. He wrote about the loss of human identity. He called that the tragedy of the 20th century. And there was no better place than Czechoslovakia to write about that loss of identity. But Václav Havel, and Michael, I'm sure you'll agree, was a man who always knew who he was. He was essentially a writer. And when he was called, he was banned in 1968 after the Soviets came in and took over his country's government. He became what they call a silenced author. He never stopped writing. He always fought for the right to write.
Carol, hold the thought right there. We have to take a short break right here, and we'll come directly back to it, and we'll dive deeply into it. Carol Rockamora, Michael Meyer are with us. We're talking about the great Václav Havel. He was a big supporter, among many other artists, of the Plastic People of the Universe band in communist Czechoslovakia. Here they are in 1974. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the life and vision of the great artist, leader, freedom fighter, Václav Havel, Czech hero, global hero, now dead at 75, leader when the Berlin Wall came down of Czechoslovakia's Velvet Revolution. Michael Meyer was there covering all that for Newsweek magazine. He wrote The Year That Changed the World. He joins us today from New York. Also with us from Philadelphia, Carol Rockamora, professor at the Tisch School of Arts at NYU, author of Acts of Courage, Václav Havel's Life in the Theater. And it was the seedbed of everything for him. He was kind of accidental political leader in the end, sometimes ambivalent even about that role. Here he was in a 1995 interview for an Australian documentary series. This was a few years into his presidency of the newly formed Czech Republic when Czechoslovakia broke in half. He wasn't happy about that, but he was asked if he saw himself as a different kind of politician.
Most presidents spend their whole lives preparing for this moment. They attend appropriate schools and educational establishments, become members in various political youth organizations, and later they climb higher and higher until one day they become presidents. I fell into it all like a man falling off a bridge into a river.
Michael Meyer in New York, he was right in the heart of resistance to the long years of Soviet domination of Eastern Europe and communist rule there. But, you know, he was a Cold War dissident in that way, but he could make it awfully hard to gloat about being on the winning side once it was over. I mean, he wasn't just about victory in this. He was about, you know, how you use freedom, not just about liberty. Madeleine Albright's got this great essay in the Washington Post where she says his preoccupation was not the acquisition of liberty. It was the use of liberty for the right purposes, Michael.
Well, that's very interesting, Tom. I mean, he was such a subtle man. He was not a politician, as he said himself in that lovely interview. His politics was the opposite of real politics. If politics is the art of the possible, his politics was anti-politics, I'd say, the art of the impossible. I remember I first met Václav Havel on a sunny day, June 2nd, I think it was 1989. He had been released from prison just 1 or 2 days before, and journalists were traipsing through his apartment wanting to interview him. And he was so tired, he said, Mike, can we just have a conversation? And we started fell to talking, and we began talking about his idea of politics and the special responsibility a writer has in a totalitarian society. And he spoke about all the letters he had gotten while he was in prison and all the petitions. 40,000 people signed a petition for his release.
Wow.
Now, as Carol was saying just a moment ago, to do that in a society like Czechoslovakia was at the time was to declare yourself a dissident. It was to expose yourself to the authorities, to arrest, to harassment. Maybe your children wouldn't go to school. Maybe you would lose your job. And for all those people to do that, Havel saw that as an incredible sign of both hope and power. He looked at me at one point and said, he paused and said, "I believe that we Czechs, we are finally finding our courage." And he said, he said, "It is though we are frozen in time. We Czechs, we are waiting, sitting here, waiting for history to resume." And at some moment, he said, there was going to be a confrontation. The police would make some mistake. The people who had written those petitions would show up one day and protest, and the police might beat them up. And he said, the next day, 40,000 people will file into Wenceslas Square. And it was prophetic, because that's exactly what happened, of course. And he saw his job at that moment as to seize the opportunity to channel the people's power, to channel the great uprising in the name of humanity, and always do it gently, velvetly, quietly, without seeming to be the leader, to be trusted because he was one of the people, precisely because he did not want power.
And yet, Carol, in all of that, as an artist, also as a politician, he was always so aware of the flawed clay of humanity. I mean, people did rise up, but many had not. Madeleine Albright writing about the urgency in his voice coming less from lofty expectations of human character than from the distress he felt at those who accepted injustice simply because it was easier to look away than to resist, Carol.
Yes, absolutely. And what Michael just said struck a chord about finding the joy in the situation of being a banned, silenced author. In 1975, Havel, whose plays by then were banned for 6 years, he and his neighbor up in the Bohemian Mountains at their farmhouse where Havel died on Sunday, they put together an amateur group of actors and rented a hall and performed a banned, forbidden play in front of 300 of their best friends and family, knowing that those people were risking their livelihood just to be there. And there's a famous photo taken of that audience, of those brave 300 people, after that performance of The Beggar's Opera on November 1st, 1975.
Yeah.
Many of them were arrested, had their driver's license taken away, had their jobs taken away. So ironically, gentlemen, those were very exciting years in the theater for a banned author like Václav Havel.
He was harassed. He was followed. He spent years in prison, 5 years nearly at one stretch there. This was serious business. Pursuing a moral universe, and especially, though, for someone who had no illusion that he really lived in one. Michael Meyer, Carol Ruckamora, stand by. Tina in Rumford, Rhode Island. Tina, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
On the eve of Václav Havel's inauguration, I was a student, a 19-year-old student at the Sorbonne, and my father had come from New York to visit me, and he insisted. He said, we have to go and catch it. And so we took a train, an all-night train to Prague, and we both, it turned out, had walking pneumonia. We'd stood for 18 hours because every journalist and important person or anybody was on every train going anywhere to Prague to try to catch the inauguration. And I have to say, I'm a poet and a teacher, and I have to say on some level that experience was so transforming at the age of 19. We made it for the inauguration, and along the way met journalists from all over the world, and every person that we encountered was just so enthralled. I mean, the refrain was, "We have a poet for a president." And people were, you know, up for days, standing around transistor radios in the streets, just listening to his voice.
It was an amazing time. Does he live in your poetry today, Tina, somehow, Havel?
You know, I can't say explicitly that he does, but I'm sure, I mean, I feel, you know, in hearing this conversation, I haven't thought about that experience in so long, but I can't help but think that it was transformative and therefore formative on some level, even in my work, if it's not there in an obvious way to anybody else, you know. But it really, you know, it gave me a lot of perspective. And it was important to see other people my age who had lived under tyranny feeling so invested and so hopeful.
It certainly felt magical as it happened, even from afar. To be 19 in the middle of it, that must have been something. We're going to go to Prague in just a moment, and a close friend of Václav Havel. One more call here first from Montreal, Canada. Andy is calling. Andy, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. It was great to hear even just a little snip of the Plastic People, because I haven't found it very much remarked that perhaps the greatest influence on Václav Havel and the Czech revolutionaries from America was the counterculture. And that when, you know, Lou Reed, like, finally played in Prague under when Havok was there,
yes,
that he was treated like a visiting head of state, or that he wanted Frank Zappa to be his first minister of culture. And this was blocked by the State Department.
No question about it. A huge fan of Lou Reed. And, yes, he wanted Frank Zappa in there. And the George Bush presidency, the first, said, no, thank you. But Havel was loyal to that, brought them all over. Yeah, absolutely. Let's get some perspective on that right from Prague in the Czech Republic. We're joined right now by Olga Czerny, executive director of the Forum 2000 Foundation that Havel was so central to creating and keeping alive. He was the former national security advisor to Václav Havel. Before the Velvet Revolution, he worked as a theater producer, editor, and translator of British and American literature and film. He joins us right now from Prague. Olga Czerny, thank you very much for being with us today. We're grateful to you for taking the time. Thanks for being here.
Hi, this is Olga Czerny, and thank you for having me.
What's the most important thing for us to remember about your longtime friend, Václav Havel?
I think the most important thing to remember is that he was an extremely decent man. I mean, decency was his overall... overall characteristics, and he was a principled man. He was a man of a strong moral clarity, and he was also a mirror for the Czech society. And some people were uneasy looking at that mirror, because it reminded them of their own complacency with the former communist regime and so on, as opposed to Havel's principled stances.
How did he enjoy or not enjoy being a politician? Sometimes people of such high morality find it difficult to live in that universe of compromises.
Well, I still very vividly remember that when he was... And someone said that Václav should run for the presidency, and that was... sometime in the mid, maybe latter half of November 1989, he was very reluctant about it. He said, "Well, I mean, he was very, very anxious," and he said, "Well, I don't feel like it. And first of all, nobody knows me in this country, you know," which was true, you know. So he was practically unknown as a dissident. I mean, there were some slanderous articles about him in appearing in the press, but people didn't bother to read him, and therefore they didn't even know that he was a reactionary element, as they used to call him.
Reactionary element. It's been said that he was more popular abroad than at home. What do you think of that?
So, but that, of course, changed overnight when he got elected president of the country, and those first few months of his presidency, let's say the first half a year, when he fulfilled his promise and led this country to the first free elections and the definitive downfall of the communists of the communists in this country. I mean, that has changed. Those were the heydays. Those were the days when he was extremely popular and every child knew his name and people pinned their hopes on him and so that Havel would overnight change their life towards the better, and but that didn't happen.
Olga Czerny, there in Prague, his life only ended 2 days ago on Sunday. It's still so recent. It means that he, like us, witnessed the events of this past year in the Arab world, the Arab Spring, in the United States and beyond, in the Occupy movement. Do you know what he thought about these dissident, you might say, movements? Was he sympathetic? How did he look on them? Do you know?
Well, I think that you're sympathetic. I mean, this is a, like a thin red line which goes right across through his whole life. This passionate support of the dissidents and prisoners of conscience everywhere in the world. Actually, on the Day of the Human Rights, I took part in organizing a little roundtable in Prague on human rights in Asia. The roundtable was attended by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, former French Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Kushner, Shirin Ebadi of Iran, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, and a few other people. And Havel made introductory remarks there. And he asked me to read them on his behalf. And it was in his introductory remarks, and this is his last statement on the record before he died, I mean, he passionately appealed to international community to support dissidents and prisoners of conscience all over the world, particularly in the time when human rights are being relegated on the second seat and are being overshadowed by emphasis on economic interest and other things.
Human rights put in the back seat. Václav Havel not supporting that, but it's certainly widespread. We're talking about the great Czech leader, Havel. Let me get a quick call here from East Lansing, Michigan. Stand by, Olde, in Prague, if you would. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on. I love your program.
Thank you.
My observations are only just from travel, anecdotal in nature, but I've been to Prague twice in the last 2 years. And it's just amazing the transformation that's taken place in that city in the last 20 years since the communists left. And my understanding is that Havel was instrumental in the very difficult transition from communism to capitalism. But they've been able to restore all of their historical buildings. They have a mass transit system that is the best I've ever seen anywhere. Their metro stations are architectural masterpieces. Everything looks new, even though a lot of the trains and buses are 20 years old.
Richard, let me take that while we have the pleasure. Let me take it to Prague and Olde Czerny. Olde, what about the evolution of his own country, your country, ultimately the Czech Republic? Our caller from Michigan says he's seen it. He's seen how beautiful it is, how well kept and so on now. But Havel was not always in the camp of the, as you say, of the economics first people. How did he look on the path of his own country after the end of the Soviet era?
Right. Well, I think that Havel's conception of democracy was based on development of a strong civil society, morality and basic decency, and rule of law and. But he collided with some pragmatists in the Czech politics who emerged after 1990, who advocated a sort of quick transition without any moral scruples and impediments posed by the rule of law and so on. So he was on a collision course with our current president Václav Klaus, for example. But what your caller from Michigan said, it's true. I mean, it's a different country than it was 22 years ago.
Olde Czerny, it's been great to have you. We are grateful to you for joining us today from Prague, longtime friend of Václav Havel there. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Czerny.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you. Bye.
Carol Rakamora, please stand by in Philadelphia. Michael Meyer in New York. We're talking about the great Václav Havel. Frank Zappa inspired the Czech band that he so identified with, the Plastic People of the Universe, named for the Zappa song Plastic People from 1967. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Me seeing neon, moon above. I searched for years. I found no love. I'm sure that love will never be. A product of plasticity, a product of plasticity, a product of plasticity.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the life and vision of the great artist, leader, freedom fighter, Václav Havel, Czech hero, global hero, now dead on Sunday at 75. Leader, when the Berlin Wall came down in Czechoslovakia's Velvet Revolution. Michael Meyer is with us, longtime correspondent for Newsweek International. He was there, saw it happen, was there in the aftermath in the 90s. He's the author of The Year That Changed the World, The Untold Story of the Fall of the Berlin Wall. Carol Rocamora is with us from Philadelphia, professor at the Tisch School of the Arts at NYU, and author of Acts of Courage, Václav Havel's Life in the Theater. And it was a deep and rich one, and he stayed with it all the way through, even when he was involved with politics. Here, just a little bit more of Václav Havel himself, 1995 documentary. He was asked by ABC Australia's George Negus if he ever thought he should have stayed with his old life, his life in the arts, when faced with the challenges of the presidency there.
Samozřejmě občas se mi zasteskne.
Of course, I sometimes miss the life of an independent intellectual who does not have to grant audiences, does not have to receive state visits, does not have to comment on everything, and who sits at home, studies, reads, writes, and every now and then visits a pub.
Only every now and then, he would have done that more. Carol Rocamora, I want you to take us further into his theater in particular. He was so insistent on using it. I think he ultimately said that he found it more powerful than politics at getting at what really matters and conveying it to
absolutely.
The world.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And he was so inventive. In the 70s, when he was not all the theaters in Prague, their doors were shut to him, even the one that that started him out, the balustrade. Mm. He found other places, living rooms, his own farmhouse in Hradeček, where he died. The house was teeming with writers and artists and actors and unemployed people, band artists, who came together every summer to watch those band plays that he would keep on writing and would perform in his barn with his neighbor Andre Krub. So that sense of inventiveness, that drive to keep on writing and to set an example, was always with Havel. My favorite plays of Václav Havel may not be the ones that will live on. They're a trio called the Vaněk plays, and they're based on Havel himself.
The character Vaněk, kind of his own stand-in.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A very quiet man who hardly says anything but watches the world around him and makes no moral judgment. Wouldn't you agree, Michael, that was one of the aspects of Havel that is most admired?
Well, it's funny you should bring that up, Carol. I watched those two plays in Warsaw in 1989, The Audience and I believe Temptation.
The best.
Yes, featuring Vaněk. And I told Havel that because he had never seen them performed in a theater on his own. He wanted to know how the audience reacted. And I told him that the charge that went through that theater was electric. Here were people on stage saying what all the people in the audience had been thinking for so long. And the example of seeing these things said at that moment of time, this would have been probably early spring of 89, given the times, was a small revolution in itself. And it happened. A very senior member of the Polish Communist Party was in the audience with his glamorous actress wife, and I told Havel that, and Havel wanted to know, well, how did he react? How did he react? And the man applauded, and he said, yes, he has to, he must. And he saw that, too, as a sign of change, that the power of the people in this humorous way was having its out.
Carol, how did he reconcile his tremendous sense of the absurd? And as you say, the man who makes no moral judgment, with his high kind of moral requirements. I mean, he said that the prerequisite for everything political is moral. Politics should be ethics put into practice. This means taking a moral stand, not for practical purposes in the hope that it will bring political results, but as a matter of principle. It seems a long way from an absurdist perspective to that high moral call.
I know what you're saying, and yet absurdism was the perfect voice for Václav Havel. Do you know why? For a very practical reason, as Michael will know. There was censorship at the time, very harsh censorship. And one had to get past the censor. And the censors didn't understand the absurdist tone. They thought they were comedies. So either
so it was an open path in a way.
Absolutely. And they were very clever. They would always submit in the 60s a Václav Havel play to the censors on a Friday, because most of the censors under communism would leave for the weekend on Thursday night.
Oh, gosh.
So then they would open that play on Saturday night and guest pass the censors.
Well, when he took power, he was very prepared to speak to his own people about something beyond just the kind of mundane accomplishment. He said this was his first address as president, New Year's Day, 1990. And speaking still to what was a united Czechoslovakia, then he said, "Let us teach ourselves that politics can be not just the art of the possible, especially if that means the art of speculation, calculation, intrigue, secret deals, pragmatic maneuvering, but that it can even be the art of the impossible, namely the art of improving ourselves and the world." Michael Meyer, that hardly sounds like an absurdist at the podium.
He had a healthy sense of irony, as Carol has very well said, but no, he was very pragmatic. The Velvet Revolution was America's favorite revolution. It was a street party. You saw 300,000, 500,000 people ringing bells and jiggling their keys in Wenceslas Square. Well, the jingling of the keys was a special innovation. It's sort of your time is up, the jingling of an alarm clock.
Yeah.
It was a message to the communist regime.
Off you
it's
go.
It's over.
Mm-hmm.
Off you go. And Havel was a master of that small detail. He knew it would sing. But behind the street theater was also very, very hard negotiations. He would go from that balcony over Wenceslas Square at the main Prague newspaper and into a cavern somewhere where we'd negotiate with these communist leaders on a peaceful transition. He had an interesting way of looking at it. He said, in our society, people wear masks. We all wear masks, except for a few like himself. But at the moment of truth, at the moment when power is confronted, those masks will drop. And who is to say whether or not we shall find an intelligent face behind?
Wow.
And that's what happened.
Yeah.
Havel found some very intelligent, very humane faces behind those masks. And that's what made the Velvet Revolution a velvet revolution, a transition of power, rather than something that happened just a few weeks later, say in Romania, where blood was shed in the streets.
Yeah. Everyone talked about his idealism, but this is the paper you write for, Carol, The Guardian, saying, you know, about his idealism. You know, on the one, if what you mean by that is serious ecological concern, or his abjuring, his opposition to narrow nationalism, to narrow materialism, okay, maybe idealist, but maybe he was actually more of a realist ultimately. Those narrow nationalism, ignoring ecology, narrow materialism, have costs.
Absolutely, and thank goodness for The Guardian, because they have reviewed all of Havel's plays performed at the Orange Tree Theater, a wonderful theater that provided a home away from home for Václav Havel while he was in prison from 1979 to 83. The Orange Tree, the Public Theater in New York, and the Burgtheater in Vienna all officially announced that the imprisoned Václav Havel was their playwright in residence, and they put on all those banned plays that were written in the Czech language for people who were forbidden to hear them.
Let's go to our listeners, Bill in Hull, Massachusetts. Bill, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I got to meet Václav Havel. I was a reporter working in Prague just around 1992, and somebody said, if you want to meet Havel, you can go to a restaurant called the Fish Restaurant. That's what the name was in Czech.
Yeah.
So I went down to this place. It was a very small little place. Went in. There were just a few tables, and there was a guy sitting there from AID. And pretty soon, Havel came in with two bodyguards. That's all.
Yeah.
We were eating just like 3 feet away, and then I looked over and said to him, you know, I'm from Boston. You have a lot of friends in Boston. And he kind of smiled and laughed to himself and then invited me over. And I had dessert with him, and we chatted just a little bit about what I was doing and about the revolution and himself. And the sense was, this was a very humble man and a guy that was completely unimpressed with himself. I was truly amazed. And you put him in the category of so many world leaders. I was completely blown away.
Bill, I so appreciate your painting that picture for us in that unpretentious restaurant, Václav Havel there. On that evening. Thanks for that. One more, Nate in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Nate, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just reading a Saul Bellow book, and he had an idea about how we need to fear more the people that aspire to power than even criminals, for instance. And that kind of struck me, and I thought of Vaclav Havel and how he did not aspire to leadership, and it just was something I thought about.
Yeah, and yet we reward those who gun for it, who go for it. We make them go for it. Every once in a while, an artist. Can you imagine that ever happening in this country, Nate, or is that the way of, Peru and Czechoslovakia?
It's a paradox, really. We have to worry about the people that, you know, the character traits that lead someone to leadership, that get them there. So
yes, and yet, you know, he ultimately did lead, and you're so right, and yet we have to thank those who somehow do it well. Masha in Providence, Rhode Island. Masha, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a quick remark about the influence Havel had and still has on Russian, I can't say even politics, because I can't actually say that there is politics in Russia right mm-hmm. now, but
there's certainly people in the streets in big numbers in recent weeks, Masha.
Yes. Actually, in one of his last interviews, he expressed support for what he called, in rough translation, the awakening of conscience, at least in Moscow.
Conscience, yes.
And I remember 68 very well. I was very young, but I remember my mother crying. And I remember Russian reaction on the Red Square and the words that is kind of in everybody's head right now for your freedom and ours. And the moral influence and the decency, I love this word in regards in politics, to politics it's so rarely combined, can't be underestimated. Neither Putin or Medvedev expressed any regret at his passing. And the popular opinion and the popular sentiment in Moscow is overwhelming now. It's a huge event in Russian, I don't like the word intellectual, Russian spiritual, intellectual, whatever
yes.
life, that seems to be starting to come back into being. So that's what I wanted to say, that it's not only Arab Spring and not only Occupy Wall Street, but whatever will happen in Russia will influence the world politics in the ways I prefer not to think about. But Havel is there, and his work and his character is still extremely, extremely important in Moscow now.
Masha, I'm so grateful for that witness. Very important today as we talk about Vaclav Havel. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talk about an irony, Michael Meyer. Vaclav Havel is sort of in the intellectual bloodstream of Russia at this moment of tension and ferment there. I mean, this man's thinking, living on, even in the country that backed the regime that he's so opposed.
Yes, it is a resounding irony. The anthem and all of these revolutions from 89 to the Arab Spring and beyond is this idea of dignity. And when does a society reach the breaking point? One of the symbols of the Velvet Revolution was the candle, mm-hmm. which, of course, is pure, but it also has a dark, ironic, fittingly, connotation in 89 Prague, because in 68 a young man named Jan Palach set himself on fire, and mm-hmm. he became a symbol for events of 20 years later. And isn't it interesting that about a year ago just now a fruit vendor in Tunisia set himself on fire? Young man, unable to earn a living, mm-hmm. a fruit vendor, was insulted by an aristocratic woman, having no recourse but to, unable to feed his children, care for his family, having no recourse but to light himself on fire. And that spark, if you will, ignited the revolutions of the Arab Spring. And all people have a need for dignity, a need to be recognized. When you set yourself on fire, literally or metaphorically, you're saying, I matter. I matter.
All or about dignity.
In Havel's case, we matter. And that was the spark, of course, of the Velvet Revolution and so many others.
Bodies in flames there, but also minds. I'm reminded with everything I read from him, Carol, that we shouldn't get too comfortable in this post-Cold War period. You know, I mean, the time of sort of triumphalism is long past, but even so, even now, you know, if you look at Europe or the world or the United States, he said one half of a room cannot remain forever warm while the other half is cold. His requirement to look at things honestly, with truth and love, is a high bar for any culture in any time. The power of the powerless, surely relevant in a time when power can be so concentrated in many parts of the world, including our own, Carol.
Yes, and it's so touching, based on your last three callers and Michael's comments. As sad as this week is for all of us, now is a time when we can begin to celebrate Havel and also look, take the long view of what his legacy is going to mean, both as a statesman and as an artist. Speaking of Václav Havel's life in the theater, for example, it's not about his 11 plays and 7 one-acts, whether they'll be commercially produced successfully in the future, how many productions they'll have. It's not even about their quality dramaturgically. It's what they represent. They're more than just a body of work. They're an example of an act of courage in the theater and what political theater really means as an exercise of a human right and as an act of freedom.
From a man who never stopped working for both, liberty, he said, was always worth the trouble. The power of the powerless, truth and love must prevail over lies and hate. But that takes some effort. He made it, and we're grateful for it. Carol Rocamora, author of Acts of Courage, with NYU's Tisch School of the Arts. We're very grateful to you for being with us today. Carol, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Michael Meyer, author of The Year That Changed the World. Thanks for being with us today, Michael.
Thank you, Tom. It was a real pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.